In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Rob and I are going to be talking about harnessing the power of your marketing data. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 351. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us. The podcast helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products. Whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's going on this week, Rob?
Do you ever notice that when you intro the show, you say, Rob and I are going to be talking about XYZ, and that I say, Mike and I talk about XYZ?
Oh, no, I didn't.
You haven't noticed that. All right. No, I wonder if anyone else has.
I don't know. Why do you think that is?
I think because you're actually talking about like the conversation we're about to have, because you know that 20 seconds later, we're going to be talking about this. Whereas I'm kind of like putting it up as an intro that was like independently recorded, like almost like it's done after the fact. You know, in this episode, Mike and I talk about blah, 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 right? It's like, it's almost like it's a, yeah, like it's something that happened in the past.
Like you're a time traveler and you're doing it in the future.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyways. So now that we've lost all our listeners, you know what's up for me is this week, or I guess, you know, last week, once this episode goes live, Clay Collins stepped down as the Lead Pages CEO, and he decided that it was a good time to bring in someone to scale the company. He made specific comments of, which I really respected. Like, this was his impetus. He initiated, you know, this wasn't just him offering flowery language. As some founders get kicked out by their board, they say things like this, but I know the backstory. Like, I know the inner workings of what happened. And he said, look, I'm really good at growing a company from zero to 10 or 15 million. And we're a lot more than that now. And we need more process, and we need someone who can really scale this thing up to, you know, 50, 100 million. So the COO, John Tedesco, who I've worked with now for a year, in essence, since we've been at Lead Pages, he is taking over as CEO. And Clay is really kind of taking some time off. He's going to spend more time with his family. I'm sure, I mean, the dude is super smart, right? And he reads a lot of stuff. He's into investing. And I mean, he has enough hobbies to keep him busy. So, and he won't be down for long. He's like one of us, you know, where it's like you're just constantly, you know, you have that next thing going. But, and frankly, I applaud his decision to do this. And, you know, I think he'll have some nice restful time as he kind of steps away from it.
Honestly, like, I think that's really smart and insightful on his part to know really where he fits into the startup process and understanding where he provides the most value and realizing that there's probably going to be a time where either he's not good at it or he doesn't enjoy it. So it's better to kind of move things around and put like a succession plan in place so that he can go do the things that he really wants to do or is really good at versus continuing down that road because you feel pressure to, or you feel like you are supposed to do that versus this is the right thing to do. So I just think that I agree with you. I think that that's totally the best case scenario is like he makes that decision as opposed to somebody else making it for him.
Right. And making it for him, like kind of overstaying your welcome. And yeah. Then people are like, you know, the board's like, and then, you know, your C-level suite is like, dude, what's going on here? So yeah, I agree. It is genuinely, I mean, obviously there's always uncertainty when this type of thing happens. So, you know, I wouldn't, from my perspective, when I first heard, which is, you know, a while ago, I was like, all right. I mean, Clay and I've worked close together and I know him and he's a known quantity and like, I know how we interact together. And so I was a little concerned because they did a national search for a replacement. They didn't just say, well, the COO is going to take over. And my concern was like, well, who's that going to be? You know, is this going to be someone that I don't know that runs a company completely different, you know, than Clay did? And it's going to be this big shakeup that I'm not going to enjoy working with, all that stuff. And then the more I learned and the more I heard they were thinking about going with John, I had an inner sense of relief because he's a known quantity. You know, I've worked with John. So there's obviously going to be some changes, I'm sure. John's going to run a different company than Clay did just because they're, you know, very different people. But I'm really genuinely curious and interested to see what's, you know, what's coming here in the next couple months.
I wouldn't think it's unusual for a company to run a national search like that and then end up hiring somebody internally anyway. I would imagine that, like, even if somebody applies internally, if they were planning on doing a search for a CEO anyway, like, they're going to do that just so that they get a lay of the land and see if there's other things that they're missing. Because the last thing you want to do is promote somebody from within and only to find out that, like, they're really not a good fit for that particular thing. And you feel almost obligated to give them the position versus if you actually do a full-blown search, you feel a lot better about making the decision, assuming you go internally anyway.
Totally. And it's like, I mean, it's almost like a fiduciary duty, or could be considered, you know, it's like, we got to protect all the shareholders. Let's do the right thing rather than do something that may look like an inside job, you know, or an insider thing, like almost like a nepotism thing, although it's not family, but you know, that kind of stuff. How about you, man? You are knee deep in a launch right now.
Yeah. So I sent out my first launch email yesterday and trying to record a video today that I still have not gotten to. And I'm hoping to get to that soon. But I got a few replies from my email that I sent out yesterday from people who are interested in signing up. And I've got some other people who I've talked to over the past week or two that they basically just said, hey, this is not a good time right now, but in a couple of weeks, let me know. Or they've got vacation coming up, or they're going to be out of the country or what have you. So I've got some things that are coming up. But the real impetus is to really push hard on the email list this week. And I've got a series of, I think, four or five emails that I've got to go out, and I've still got to write most of them. So that's going to be the big priority for me over the next several days, is getting those emails written and scheduled, and then making sure that all of the sign-up code is in place so that people can get in and they know what to do, and have some videos that will walk them through how to do different things, all that stuff. So it's not hard. It's just time-consuming, to be honest.
Yep, I know how that goes. So are you, how would you describe your mood? Are you excited? Are you stressed out? Are you just wanting to get it over with?
Real stressed out, to be honest. It's just because I know all the different things that need to get done. And there's like the short list, and then there's the long list. And the short list is the time-consuming stuff that has to be done in a relatively limited time frame. And then there's the long list of all the things that I would really like to do or should be done or need to get done, but I can push them off theoretically until after the launch date, but I'd rather not if I could get them in. I just can't. I don't have the resources or time or anything to be able to do that. And plus, my wife's out of town this week, which I hadn't anticipated until like after I'd kind of decided on the launch date. And then I realized, oh, she's out of town from Wednesday morning until Sunday night. So
piece of cake.
So sure.
Kids are watching themselves, right?
Right. You know, they're cooking me dinner and, you know, making me breakfast. Yeah, that's
perfect.
No. Right.
Totally not happening.
Yeah, totally not burning the house down.
Yeah, that's pretty much what you're trying to do. Oh, man, I didn't hear that part.
Yeah. So I, you know, and what's even worse is on the schedule, it was messed up. I thought she would be back Saturday night because that's what the calendar says. And she looked at it and realized that on her calendar, it shows that she's out till Sunday, but like her hotel only goes until Saturday. So I was like, oh, that sucks. Because I really thought it was 2 days ago when I found out that she was not going to be back until Sunday. So
I'm sorry. That's just not cool. Yeah. It's a bummer when you get this.
Well, I mean, it's nobody's fault. It's just
no. I don't mean not cool on Allie's part. I just mean it's not cool when that kind of stuff happens. And this is such the, like, this is entrepreneurship. Like, this is launching a startup while you have a real life and you have a family, and this kind of stuff happens. And it's a drag, and it stresses you out. But it would almost be too easy without these wrenches getting thrown into the works.
Business would be awesome if you didn't have to worry about, you know, customers or money.
Customers, people, money, yeah.
Support issues, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So what are we talking about today? Is it one of the most fascinating topics that we've ever talked about on this podcast?
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, it's all about like harnessing the power of the marketing data that you have available to you and making sure that the data that you have is in each tool is accurate, which doesn't sound very sexy, but at the same time, it's very useful. And if you don't have things wired up properly, you can very easily miss things from one tool to the next. Or let's say that things aren't getting synced properly between your app and either your marketing software, like your marketing automation software, your email list software, your billing code, for example, because somebody can sign up for an account, but they may use a different email address as like their generic catch-all for like all the credit card statements and stuff that they sign up for, because they want all the billing emails to go there, but they don't want to use that email address to actually sign up for your service. So now you end up with like mismatches between things. So what we're going to be doing today is talking about how to synchronize some of that information between your prospects, leads, and the contacts, and the fact that, of course, generally that doing that sucks, but it has to be done. And one of the things that I've noticed is that inside Drip, for example, I think that Drip does a really good job of this, but they differentiate between tags, events, and custom fields. And since I kind of look to that as like the source of authority for those types of things, why don't you explain a little bit about the differences between them? Because I think you guys do a fantastic job of explaining it on your website.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The reason we do a good job, I think, is that we have been asked that question, especially in the early days, so many times. What is the difference between these things? And, you know, this is like, to me, this is the heart of marketing data. In almost any marketing system you go into, you're going to see tags and custom fields for sure. And then we innovated in the marketing automation space, in the email marketing space, and we brought in events. And we pulled that over from analytics like Kissmetrics and Mixpanel. And so here's the simple answer. Tags are basically just a string, like a single word or a phrase that you can attach to a person. So you typically use it to segment or bucket groups of subscribers. So I might import 10 subscribers and you just say, I'm going to tag them with MicroConf 2017 attendees, right? And that tag is just a piece of text and it attaches to their record. And then you can later search who has these tags. I only want to send to people with these tags and not these other tags. So tags are, I think, are pretty well known and they're common now in marketing automation platforms and in a lot of others like sales platforms and stuff. Custom fields are really just name value pairs. And so that's how you think of it. If you use MailChimp, they call them merge tags. We call them custom fields. But it's basically like if you want a first name, then, you know, the name is first name and the value is Rob, or you could have last name or telephone number or address. And so there's just a name value pair. So it's kind of like having two tags that are linked, but really it's just, you know, name value. Events are the thing that like, there's no other platform, marketing automation platform that has events like Drip does. And again, we borrowed it, you know, or kind of migrated it over from analytics, and events are similar to tags in that they have a name, right? There's a text thing, but they also record a timestamp of when the event happened. You can look at how often it happens. So someone could, you know, you can't have a tag applied 7 times. Like a tag is applied or it's not, you know, it's applied or it's removed. Whereas an event, you can say they made a purchase 7 times. And that actually makes sense in the context. Events also have like a payload, meaning they have a collection, you know, almost like a JSON blob or a collection of name value pairs. So you think about an event like, hey, made a purchase. What type of values do you want attached to that? You probably want a price. You may want an item title, a SKU, something like that, you know, and if the event is visited a page on your website, what's the metadata you might want to know about that? Well, what was the page? Maybe you already know when it happened. Maybe, you know, how many times have they visited this page? You could attach that all to that single event. So they're kind of like, in my opinion, like a better version of tags, although tags still have some use. So I realized that was a long explanation, but I kind of wanted to describe it like if you're a sophisticated marketer, I could have been shorter, but I kind of wanted to make it, you know, approachable to lay people, basically a lay person. We have a good KB article on getdrip.com, and we will link that up in the show notes.
Yeah, I think the big differentiator there is just with the tags versus events, the tags really give you a single indicator that says this person fits this particular profile, and you can't apply that tag more than once to somebody versus the event where it can be sent. And like you said, like somebody could make more than one purchase, and that's an event. But the tags in Drip just kind of by default prevent you from adding a tag to somebody more than once because it doesn't make sense in that particular context. The other thing that struck me was the payload side of it, because an event can have a payload associated with it because it is really a description of that event and all the different parameters or properties of that event. And that may be important for something down the road.
Yeah. And the way I think about it is custom fields are, they're like a description of the person, like who the person is, because it's like first name, last name, and properties about them. Maybe you have their plan and the price they're paying you, stuff like that. Tags tend to be the buckets or groupings of people. And then events are things that people do. So that's the kind of the plain English version of it. And the reason we're talking about this and defining these things is that tags, events, and custom fields are really, they are the heart of your marketing data. This is how you have information and the learnings about the people that are, you know, on your list, coming to your site, et cetera. And so I think we're going to dive in now to how do you, there are definitely other things, other data points, but these are probably a big part of what you're going to want to try to be syncing between your marketing tools.
One thing to just kind of point out in terms of those things, like Bluetick has tags and custom fields. And one thing that I use custom fields for is tying contacts inside of Bluetick to other applications. You're not always using, for example, a numeric ID or an email address, depending on which tool you're using. So some of them will use one or the other, or they'll even have like a hash of some other data value or of the email address. And it's difficult to match the data from one tool to another unless you have that information included. So I actually use the custom field in BlueTick sometimes to attach it to like some other products. So for example, like a pipe drive deal, for example, I'll add like a pipe drive deal ID in as a custom field, and that's the name of it. And then there's a value associated with it that says, here's ID 123, for example, and that you can use inside of Zapier or other tools to tie the data back and forth or to be able to map events from one tool to another. But along those lines, let's talk about some of the different ways that you can map information from one tool to another. And the first one is a manual or custom sync. And when you're doing this, really what you're trying to do is just export data from one tool into another. And you may either be doing that through the API itself, or you may be downloading a spreadsheet or creating a CSV file and uploading it. And these things are brittle. That's the biggest problem with this, is that the tools themselves, they require a lot of code or engineering work to take those things and translate them and move the data from one tool to another. And it's really hard to keep up with the changes. And that's really the biggest drawbacks to this. That said, it can be the easiest way to get up and running or to get an initial prototype of, hey, how does this data sync or data transfer work? But longer term, as you expand what you're doing, it's probably not a great strategy to rely on that too much, because it is probably not automated. And yeah, you could create like a scheduled job or a cron job someplace that runs it on a periodic basis, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be the best way, because it is so brittle. It can fall down. And when it does, you may not even know that something went wrong or that it's not doing what it's supposed to until much later. And then it's almost too late.
Yeah. Unless you're kind of at scale, and you're really going to, like you said, monitor it. I've written some manual. I mean, they're like cron jobs and stuff that would sync up between systems. And it just seemed like every 3 to 6 months, something would go pretty badly wrong and I would have to investigate, I'd have to stop what I was doing. So it's like, if you have developers, you have a team of developers and you're kind of maintaining a whole system, and this is just one piece of it, that's cool. But if it is literally you hacking together a PHP script and you know, putting it in a directory and having it run on a cron, and meaning on a scheduled basis, that's not set it and forget it. Like, you're going to need to send yourself emails when it fails. It may die. A bunch of stuff can happen with it. And so this is not an ideal thing if you're kind of just running on your own and you want to kind of set and forget a solution.
I think your point about having something break every 3 to 6 months is spot on from what I've seen. I used to export the data from Gumroad and into a spreadsheet, and then I would take that, and then I had a small script that I wrote that would take that data and then upload it into Infusionsoft. And like you said, like every 3 months, something would change and then something would break, and then I'd have to spend time on it. And it just really was not worth the time and effort. And because they didn't really support a lot of other ways to get data in and out, it just made things harder or more difficult, and it's hard to deal with a time-consuming time sink.
Yeah, and the problem is, as developers, it's super easy to build this thing the first time, and so it's very appealing to do so. And it's kind of like, oh, I can just hack up a script here in an hour. There's an API here. There's an API here. I'll pull it out and put it in. You can. That's right. It's not that part, though. It's the maintenance of it that's the pain.
The next mechanism you can look at is using a tool that's built specifically for syncing data. And the two that come to mind right off are Zapier and If This Then That. And I think that mostly what I found is that for individual events, this tends to be something that you turn towards. And Zapier obviously has a huge base of applications that they work with. I think they're up over 800 at this point. So finding an integration between one tool that you're using and another tool is generally pretty straightforward. But the problem with doing those is that, depending on how complex your sales funnel is or your marketing funnel and what data you need to move from one to another, it's very easy to miss or realize after the fact that you should have been forwarding this particular data over and you weren't. And then you have to go set it up. And there's this line in the sand drawn, so to speak, which is not, you know, like before that point, you almost have no data. You can go back and upload it afterwards using a Zapier integration in like a spreadsheet or something like that. But it still means that like you have to do extra work in order to get it. I do find it really useful, though, to be perfectly honest. Like, I have a lot of stuff tied in through Zapier and it's supported in BlueTick. So I don't want to make it sound as if that's not a viable route, but it can be easy to miss things, is really the point, if you don't have your marketing funnel mapped out.
Yeah, I think Zapier is pretty handy for marketing stuff, actually. I know we use it with, you know, in our own internal stuff, our own internal marketing communications and getting data in and out. And I know we recommend it to customers a lot. And to, you know, it kind of takes the place in the short term of a first-class integration, right? Because we build a lot of integrations. I think we have 40-plus that are direct with Drip and something else. But Zapier gives us another, I don't even know, 100 maybe. And that's helpful. And then we can get some reports on which are the most common Zaps. And then we can say, well, we should build a first-class integration with that, you know, with those folks. So from a business owner's perspective, you know, running your own startup, I think it's definitely cool to have that Zapier integration. And then I think as a marketer, it can be a really valuable tool. You're right. There is that thing of if you miss stuff, then it's a fiasco. Or, you know, they do have rate limiting. So if you hit Zapier's endpoint, if an app hits it more than, I forget what the rate limit's fairly low, but if they hit it more than X amount per hour, then those things will just bounce. And so that app has to know to retry, which, you know, obviously we do with Drip, but I know there are a lot of other apps that are not doing that. So there are pluses and minuses, but overall I give Zapier 2 thumbs up. And then you mentioned if this and that, which I've always viewed, I mean, I think it's more of a consumer version of Zapier. And if this and that came first, and I remember some people being like, isn't this just a clone of if this and that? And it was kind of like, no, it's like a B2B version, you know, and they integrated with the apps that we as entrepreneurs and business owners wanted. Whereas if this and that's like integrate with Yahoo Pipes and, you know, all this kind of just stuff on the internet that isn't necessarily applicable to businesses. But I haven't actually used if this and that. I've only used Zapier.
Yeah, I signed up for an if this then that account a while back because I was trying to link things between Dropbox folders, and it wasn't able, like neither Zapier or if this then that were able to look into a subfolder and monitor a subfolder that hadn't yet been created. So like you could point it at a folder, but if you wanted to monitor it for files in directly that folder, it was fine. But if you wanted to monitor for like a folder getting created and then files being added to that folder inside it, neither one of them can do it. And that's not their fault. It's basically Dropbox not being able to offer that. But I found the UI of if this then that extremely confusing. I mean, I signed up for my account. I tried to use it. I probably spent several hours on it. And I'm like, you know what? I'm done. I literally deleted my account entirely. I couldn't deal with it because I couldn't figure out how to do anything. And it didn't seem like it gave you access to like a lot of the underlying pieces of how it works. And your description of it's aimed at the consumer market, that makes sense to me now, because I was just like, how do you even offer a product like this?
Yeah, I think they've, if this and that, has done a lot of integrations with like home automation stuff. And I think Zapier really has not, right? So that's where they've differentiated. And there are other alternatives, of course, to these two. And we'll link up a Quora thread where someone asks, you know, what are the alternatives? And there's a big list there if you're interested in looking at more. But for my money, Zapier is definitely the leader in terms of kind of B2B and marketing data that we're talking about.
The next mechanism you can try and use is a product called Segment. And you can get this at segment.com. It used to be called segment.io. But the big draw here is that it allows you to essentially replay some of the events that have happened in some of your different marketing automation tools or your different sales tools, and then pipe them to different places. So it's really good for doing that at scale. And because it gives you the capabilities of really just using one snippet of like JavaScript, and you can turn on and off different tools in the application that you're sending data to, and because it gives you that backlog of things, like as soon as you connect it to your account or put it on your website, you then get like a full history of all the previous things that have happened and can send them into a new tool. So let's say that you decide to move from one tool to another. Tool 2 is going to be the go-to later on. You can always just say, just turn that new one on and pipe all the previous data into it. And I always thought that that was like a really fascinating way of doing things. They used to have a different pricing model as well. Like they would look at the tools that you were sending data into or pulling data from, and they would charge you more based on what those tools were. And like Salesforce, for example, tends to be an expensive tool. So it ended up being like in a higher price tier, even if you weren't using it very much.
I didn't realize you could replay old events with Segment.
I've not done it myself. I have seen like there was documentation there. Like last time I looked at it in terms of like, you know, how to do that stuff. That was my understanding, was you could basically replay things to like basically pipe all your previous data into like a second tool. So let's say somebody wanted to switch from, I don't know, like Aweber or something like that to Drip. They could take a lot of their old data and pipe it from, they used to go into Aweber, let's say it's 30 days or 60 days or whatever. And they could say, okay, take this 30 or 60 days worth of history and send it into Drip instead and replay it, so that now in Drip we'll get all of that information. I don't know how far it goes back, but that was kind of the sales pitch for it.
That's interesting, because I was going to say that would be hefty if they were keeping all your data forever. Like that's always a thing I thought they didn't do, just because of the volume that they would have to absorb.
Yeah, my suspicion is that they don't do that forever, but I would imagine that they probably have at least a semi-limited history. And if you want, even if it's like a couple of weeks, that couple of weeks could be important to you. If you wanted to just try out like a new tool, it gives you a much easier way of doing that, because when you sign into a new tool, especially if it's any level of complexity, you've got nothing there. So you don't really have a good idea of what it can do for you. But if you can pre-populate it with actual live data from your own systems for the past couple of weeks, you sign up, pipe it all in, and boom, it's there. You can actually use it and see what it would really do for you.
Yeah, Segment.com is a solid tool. They integrate with a ton of things. And as you said, it's not for the one-off moving, you know, tags and custom fields here and there. It's an event-based system. And so it allows you, I mean, the original thing was that they allowed you to put the Segment JavaScript on your website, and then you could pipe it anywhere. So you could pipe it into Kistrometrics or Mixpanel, or I think like Google Analytics. You could pipe it into Drip, which, you know, we integrate with them. You could pull stuff into and out of Hittail, like they integrated with us back in the day. And they actually wrote that integration. But I think now when you do it, I think you have to write your own, is my recollection. But it's a good tool, and it's for masses of data. And I think that it can be super helpful for getting data into and out of systems and being able to report on them, and not necessarily in Segment, but they integrate with a bunch of analytics and reporting tools. And so that's something, you know, some people will come in, they'll use Drip and they'll say, I want like all this fancy pivot table capabilities and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I want all this stuff. And it's like, well, we're a marketing automation platform. We're not a business intelligence platform. Like, we're not going to build that into Drip. But here we integrate with Segment and we send a ton of data to them. So just hook up your Segment account, then pipe that into one of these BI tools, and you're set. Like, you can do whatever you want. So it allows, you know, it allows us not to have to build the world into Drip and to be able to put boundaries on things.
And I think using it as kind of the data hub is extremely helpful. The downside of it is, of course, that like there's a lot of complexity there too. So you could easily spend hours, days, or even weeks just evaluating it and seeing if it's going to fit into your business and just spending the time learning how to use it. And I found that when I first signed up for it a long time ago, was that it was a huge time sink to really get up and running with it and understand how the different things worked and how it pipes data from one place to another and how you would do some of that data piping. But that said, it is really powerful. You can do a lot with it. So moving on to the next section, I think the one of the key pieces of advice in a situation where you're trying to get all the data from one place to another is to settle on a single source of authority. And that's a phrase that I've used for years talking about like systems management software and trying to manage like large numbers of machines, whether it's, you know, a couple hundred or 25, 100,000 machines all at once. It's very difficult to do that if you don't have a single source of authority for that information. Because if data gets out of sync, you need to know what is the master source where this information comes from. Who's the gatekeeper of this? So let's say you've got tool one and tool two, and tool two doesn't have a piece of information. Is it not supposed to have that information, or does it not have it yet? And you have no idea by looking at that tool or the other one, unless you've already decided which of those two is going to be the master data source.
Yep. And this is actually an interesting thing happening with like ESPs and marketing automation platforms is, you know, we build Drip. I keep bringing it back to Drip because this stuff's really something we have dealt with a lot, is all this data syncing and this source of authority, or I think Brennan Dunn calls Drip his source of truth in terms of the data, or you could call it like the customer database. Some people might call it like CRM, because really it is customer relationship management, but that has now been in terms been bastardized into you know, sales software. But this is something that what you'll find out is if you do a lot of email marketing, then it quickly your email provider, assuming it stores data like clicks and purchases and has your tags and has your events, it can quickly and easily become your source of authority or your source of truth. And so that's something we have been doubling down on as we noticed more people doing that. You know, first it was solopreneurs who said, oh, Drip is the where I keep all the data and I want to get all the data in there. And then we started seeing large, you know, 2 and 3 person companies. Now we have 5 and 10 person companies. It's really interesting to see. So we've doubled down on that and started building more stuff to allow people to do that. And so I think if you are going to do a lot of online marketing, that's something to think about. You know, it'll probably be a CRM or a marketing automation platform that's going to be this customer database for you.
And I think that actually brings up an interesting point that I've run into, is that what is the ID, or how do you identify who a person is in your source of authority? Is it going to be an email address? Is it going to be some sort of a generated unique identifier or something like that? Because it's difficult when you get into a situation where somebody signs up, they put in their credit card and all the billing information goes to that one email address, and then they sign up and they have a user account that is a different email address. In marketing automation software, a lot of them, the email address is kind of that source of authority for, or that unique identifier for that person. And in the case of like billing information, especially if it's like a one user account, now you have two email addresses and it really is the same person. And it's hard to differentiate between them sometimes. And that's why some people will go towards like using a CRM for that. But again, like there's pluses and minuses in both aspects, whether you're using a marketing automation tool like Drip or if you're using a CRM, like both of them are going to have pros and cons for that type of schema. So last thing to kind of talk about is, how do you keep some of these data paths straight? And I think there's pretty basic guidelines about how to track the information flow from one tool to another. But the basics that you can start out with is just like a pen and paper. And that's easy to get started with when you're just trying to build out and map what your sales and marketing funnels look like, because you can just kind of really quickly draw something up. But as it gets more complicated, you're probably going to have to graduate more towards a tool or a document or a spreadsheet that is going to allow you to put a lot more information in there. Something that I found useful is to implement some sort of a workflow in either a desktop or a cloud-based workflow tool. So there's a bunch of them that I've tried. I've tried things like Gliffy. I've tried Draw.io. I've tried Mockups. It's M-O-Q-U-P-S. I've tried doing things in Drip's workflow tool as well, and that works great so long as you are operating within the confines of Drip. Like once you start to go out of that and do things that are not involved directly with Drip, it sort of falls apart a little bit. And that's not a knock on Drip specifically. It's just...
Sure. Just the reality of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the reality of it. It's like, that's not what it was for. So the one I've actually kind of settled on is a product called Lucidchart. Fairly inexpensive. I think it's $8 or $9 a month for like one of their more advanced accounts, but you can get it for $5 a month on the lower end.
I've heard of it. I haven't used it, but I've heard some people speak highly of it.
Yeah, it's really good for being able to map out what a workflow looks like in terms of how people enter your marketing funnel and how they go into another one. And then you can also have a bunch of different things kind of wired together. So like you can zoom in on one specific piece of it, and then you can just kind of encompass it and say, okay, this is how people get onto our mailing list. And that's like the whole workflow. And then once they're there, you have like a different diagram and document that describes how they move through the sales funnel itself or the onboarding funnel. Each one of those could be a completely different document. You just kind of link back and forth between them.
So I think that wraps us up for the day. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot. It's used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups and visit our website for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.